One of the stories of our time, and perhaps one of the stories of the coming election, is the inequality in the American economic system. The old expression, the rich get richer, is backed by numbers, showing the greatest growth in income among people who already have plenty of it. Wages for the middle class and below have stagnated for a long time. There are plenty of people who feel the system just does not work for them, but today's guest says those are the people who can fix the system. John Hope Bryant's latest book is How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. John Hope Bryant grew up in the tough neighborhoods of Compton and South Central in Los Angeles. He was homeless for a time in his youth, has traveled the world, and works to empower people in what he calls low-wealth communities. He founded Operation Hope after the Rodney King riots in L.A. in the early 90s and has served under or alongside three presidents. John Hope Bryant, a pleasure to have you on The Exchange today.
It's my honor to be with you, and thanks for having me. I think that various iterations of public radio are in many ways the only honest conversation we have left in this country, and what you do there at Jefferson Exchange is extraordinarily important. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that. Is it fair to say that your economic future looked fairly bleak early in your life?
Yes and no. My point is that there's a difference between being broke and being poor. The being broke is economic, but being poor is a disabling frame of mind. Any depressed condition of your spirit, you must vow never to be poor again. So my mother told me she loved me every day of my life that I can remember. So I was really never poor, even though we lived in a low-wealth neighborhood. I believed in myself. My dad owned his own business for 54 years. Now, my dad was financially illiterate, so we lost it all, too. We had a gas station and an eight-unit apartment building and a nursery and our own home and a cement contracting business, and my dad managed to lose it all because he was too prideful and pride-filled to admit that that he didn't understand money. Now, so every dollar he made, we spent $1.50. The more money we made, the broker we got. So that caused the divorce of mom and dad. That caused us to lose our home, not his home, our home, because that's how you build wealth. Home ownership, and if you're a so-called poor family, that's your hedge fund. But I didn't, you know, as a 5-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid, I didn't realize all that when I was growing up. It took me 20 years later to realize what was going on with my mom and my dad and why they were living in different homes when I was 10. When I was 18, I believe you're talking about, is when I was homeless for 6 months of my life. And yeah, it was pretty bleak there for a long moment, but I never gave up hope, and I never didn't believe that there wasn't a place for me in this world, and that is a key part of this hope doctrine on poverty that I outline in the book. That's the real definition of poverty. That half of poverty is just low self-esteem. It's just lack of belief and lack of confidence in yourself, and people get there through different means. But however you get there, if you don't believe in yourself in this country, it will chew you up and spit you out by 9:30 in the morning. To do what you do right here, right now, requires confidence. To talk to you in response requires confidence. Confidence is half of wealth, and it's certainly half of poverty. And so I was broke, but I wasn't poor.
Well, the term you used to describe your father, was that financially illiterate?
Yes, he was financially illiterate. Is financially. He's still with us, thank God, but I take care of him today, which is, you know, an oddity of all oddity. Worked for 54 years running his own business, and at the end of 54 years had nothing to share for, to show for it. In fact, was basically financially destitute, and I'm honored to do it. I'm glad that I can, and I guess everybody buying the book has in some ways helped me do it, but, you know, I've been taking care of him for 20 years now because he financially couldn't take care of himself. But without him, obviously, being that role model early on in my life, one of the three pillars that really gave me the memo on free enterprise was my dad. Where would I be? So I'm honored to give back to him because he was my roots. But, yeah, absolutely, unquestionably, undeniably financially illiterate and cocky about it.
Really?
Yeah.
In what sense? I mean, he was proud of the fact that he was financially illiterate?
No, just proud. And refuse to, I mean, most people are ashamed to admit they don't understand money. I mean, most of those who are in foreclosure weren't poor people, because poor people don't have $21 trillion to lose in a global economic crisis. I remember asking my mentor, Ambassador Andrew Young, I asked his gardener, how was he doing in this global economic crisis. He said, shoot, I was poor before the crisis. I'll be poor after the crisis. He said, it's all my rich friends that want to kill themselves. So people with college degrees, specifically middle-income white males, got more subprime mortgages in the global economic crisis than all minority groups combined. So the myth that minorities in community reinvestment committed the churned out the global economic crisis, caused it, is absolutely incorrect. You take all minority groups, put them in one group, and it doesn't outnumber the group of white males who lost their job and didn't have an employed spouse. But half those in foreclosure never called their lender. So that doesn't sort of make sense. These are highly educated people, but they didn't call the lender because I believe they were ashamed. So money is an emotional thing. My dad was very emotional and very full of pride.
And obviously ended up in financial ruin in later years. John Hope Bryant is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. We'll talk about the major concepts in the book. Obviously, one of the pillars here is financial literacy, learning a bit about the whole financial system. In fact, chapter 3 in the book is called Cracking the Code of Finance. We'll get into some of the nitty-gritty of the details about how the poor can save capitalism with John Hope Bryant and with your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is John Hope Bryant, the founder of Project Hope and many other ventures to get people in low-wealth communities, as he calls them, to empower themselves and to move up in the world. He counts among his friends Bill Clinton, President Obama, Andrew Young, and his latest book is called How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. John, I guess we need to back up even a half a step more and say, you know, if you're not doing well in the system, why would you want to save it?
Well, because it's a very good question. And I go one step further. I was in San Francisco speaking last Friday, and somebody said, well, you know, capitalism is a horrible system. Basically your point. You know, why would we want to save this? And my response is that capitalism is a horrible system, except for every other system. That communism has failed, and socialism won't work with 350 million people. Even communist countries have adopted a version of capitalism, i.e. China, i.e. Russia. So like a software upgrade, the LinkedIn founder said, if you're not slightly embarrassed by your 1.0 software release, you're released too late. We've got to mend the system that we are in. It has actually incredible benefits to it. And, you know, people who are jamming up this system are actually living in it and benefiting from it, and not because they never got the memo, we don't understand free enterprise. They don't actually understand that they're actually complaining about the boat that they're floating in. And so we're all living in the system right now. People are arguing on LinkedIn about how capitalism is horrible, is arguing on a capitalist system. Same thing about Twitter. I mean, you can go on and on and on. A mortgage, your home, the car note, the car. I mean, the things that allow this conversation right now would not be possible without people supporting your radio station, and that they're supported by a paycheck. The paycheck comes from an employer, and 90% of employers in America are private sector, not government. And government only gets its money from the private sector. So without you know, as Shimon Peres told me, even if you want to distribute the money like a socialist, you got to collect money like a capitalist. We don't understand the system that we actually are in, and that's part of the problem. You know, somebody said, oh, I hate rich people. No, you don't. You hate rich people until you become rich. What we hate is a system that is gamed. That's what we hate. We hate a system that we think is rigged. We hate a system that we think is turned against us. So money's not bad. It's the love of money that's bad. Capitalism is not bad. It's the pimping of it. It's the abuse of it. It's treating people like transactions and not like relationships. But to quote my friend Desmond Tutu, and a hero to the world, a knife is not anything other than a knife, but you can use it to butter bread and feed your brother, or cut your brother's arm off. It is the intent that matters, the intent of this book, How the Poor Can Save Capitalism, and the work of Operation Hope that I founded, is to use the system of free enterprise to set people free. Because in the 21st century, freedom is self-determination. And arguably our greatest president, Abraham Lincoln, in 1865, and this is detailed in the book, thought the most important thing he could do for former free slaves was, beyond emancipation, was to teach them the language of money and financial literacy, which was the Freedmen's Bank that he founded that nobody seems to know about. March 3rd, 1865, whose mission was literally to teach free slaves about money. He was killed 6 weeks later. And that's why poor people are poor. To make it extremely succinct, is not just poor blacks didn't get the memo on free enterprise, but if you think about half of America who make $50,000 a year or less, you think about people in the area that are listening to your radio station who make $70,000 a year or less, maybe an average of $50,000. They've got too much month at the end of their money. And so the question is not whether you're white, black, race, red, brown, or yellow. Whether you got some more green is the question. And not having enough green causes stress in your marriage, i.e. my mom and dad divorcing, number one cause for divorce in America, causes financial, emotional stress, societal, abuse in families. The reason that abused women stay with that nutcase dude is over money. I mean, money is, other than God or love, nothing changes your life more than nothing changes your life more than God love than moving your credit score 120 points, which is the point I make in this book and the work we're doing on the ground with Operation Hope to transform lives, to use free enterprise, to help people, not to hurt people, and to turn a, quote, poor neighborhood into an emerging market. This is a conversation we've never really had. I mean, there's about four different conversations in this book that America's never had. What is poverty? It's wrong. What people have been told about what poverty is, it's wrong. Who is poor? What people have been told about who is poor is wrong. There are people on this call listening on your radio station who make $100,000 a year who qualify under my definition of poor. Who's driving the economy? Where do jobs come from? All that's wrong. Who's really your nemesis? Who's your so-called enemy? All this stuff is wrong, and we end up chasing our tails, digging in the wrong holes, and becoming experts in what we are against, and using all our energy there versus figuring out what we're for, and then rowing in this boat together toward more shared prosperity.
John Hope Bryant, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange's book is How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. Boy, a couple different directions we could go here. Let's talk. You've mentioned a couple times about people getting the memo, or people who didn't get the memo are the ones who are struggling.
Ferguson, Missouri, by the way.
What's that? Ferguson, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. That's not about race. That's about poverty. It's an entire city that never got the memo. Period. That's the problem in Ferguson. 6% voter turnout rate. That's what it is in Ferguson.
6%? Is that what you said?
6.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's worse. In the year 2000, and it's going to sound like a racial thing, but it's not. In the year 2000, Ferguson was 75% white, middle class, above average indexes and everything that matters. By 2008, certainly by 2010, Ferguson was 75% black. All of a sudden, crime goes through the roof. So somebody's going to say, oh, you see these black people. It's wrong. Crime goes through the roof. There's more poor whites in America than poor anybody else, by the way. Crime goes through the roof. All social services goes through the roof. Unemployment goes through the roof. Because you have a group of people now who never got the memo. They don't understand free enterprise and capitalism. Never got the lesson in it. Never showed how to start a business, to become an entrepreneur, to create jobs, to create a tax base. To quote Van Jones, the best way to stop a bullet is a job. So the issue is poverty. And when you don't own anything, you don't vote. Because why? I mean, other than the patriotic part of it, and other than you want, good governance. But if you're not a stakeholder, really, do you really care? I mean, you're rather transient if you don't own a stake in something. And you just sort of drift. But if you own a home, you're concerned about your block. You're concerned about your school. You're concerned about your neighborhood, who picks up the trash, whether they don't or do. If you own a business, are you concerned about tax policy and so on? becoming a stakeholder gets you invested in the system. But the first stake you've got to take is the stake in yourself, which is the real definition of poverty, which is not financial. It's low self-esteem. Half of poverty is low self-esteem. Half. Lack of confidence and belief in yourself. You and I couldn't have this conversation right now without you and me having a shared confidence, as an example.
We do indeed have that. John Hope Bryant, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. Your thoughts, comments, questions about the system we're in, how we can make it better, how we can participate in it more. Join us at 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So when we talk about some basic steps to build confidence, then, I mean, what are some of the first things people should do if they want to move from this drifting, this transience of renting and owing things to people and turn that around into an ownership situation? What are some of the basic steps they should be thinking about?
If you're an adult, the first thing that you should do, the thing that the ripple that becomes a wave, is raise your credit score. We have a 700 credit score communities initiative at Operation Hope that then translates into 700 credit score clubs. We are teeing that up through Hope Inside locations. The flagship is at Ebenezer Church, Dr. King's Church in Atlanta. We've opened 100 locations in bank branches across the country: SunTrust Banks, Regions Banks, PNC Bank, Bank of the West, U.S. Bank, Popular Community Bank, and a range of others. 15 of the largest banks have us inside of their bank branches, and the number's growing. When you walk in, so we're the private banker to the working class, the struggling class, and the teetering middle class. Folks are too much money into your money. You come in, we do HUD-approved mortgage counseling, mortgage restructuring. My dad could have used that 30 years ago. Small business and entrepreneurship certification training and funding, earned income tax credit certification, amendment to your tax return and funding. So anybody listening to your program who makes $50,000 a year or less, the government owes them a check for working. It's called EITC. But one out of four Americans who qualify for it never even asked for it. So you have a cousin who makes $23,000 a year, two children, they're a teacher, government owes them $4,000. If they've never filed, it's retroactive for 3 years. That's $12,000, enough to reset your life and stop arguing with your mate over money. And then the last piece, which is really your crux of your question, is 700 Credit Score Communities Program. We put you in the program. We work with you over 24 months, and we've been raising credit scores 120 points on average. That just transforms your life. It also transforms the neighborhood that you're living in, because a check cashing operator and a payday loan operator and liquor stores can't survive in a high financial IQ neighborhood. A 700 credit score neighborhood won't tolerate it, whereas a 500 credit score neighborhood is a check cashing, basically, neighborhood and doesn't even know that they're being pimped, doesn't even know that they're being enslaved. So whether you're a rural white community, whether you're a black urban community, or whether you're around a military base, you're being preyed upon by financial charlatans. And that's not racism. That's target marketing. They're targeting a 500 credit score customer. And I'm going to rob them of their customer by raising credit scores through these Hope Inside locations. 1,000 locations over the next 5 years is our goal, so that it's within reach of everybody in the country who are dealing with this financial shame privately.
Is 700 sort of the magic number for a credit score? That's like the place at which you become acceptable to people who would be thinking about loaning money?
Your financial royalty.
At 700, your financial
royalty. 700, your financial royalty. Now, my mother's 800, which is just unprecedented. But at 550, nobody mainstream will touch you. You're a prime target. Basically, 500 to 600, 500 to 580 for sure. You're a target to check cashers, payday loan lenders, rent-to-own stores, title lenders, liquor stores. They all are preying on a lack of hope and financial ignorance. Above 600, your life changes. And above 670, you're a banking customer. So when I go to banks, I'm not asking them for a handout. I'm saying I'm going to introduce you to a new sustainable customer in your neighborhood. And now, because this person has better choice-making skills, they're not going to take that financial subprime mortgage that was offered in 2008 that got everybody in trouble. that made people turn their nose to capitalism and say it's an evil system. I didn't take a subprime mortgage because somebody would have, may have offered it, but I wouldn't have taken it. You wouldn't have taken it, is my guess, based on my sense of you on the phone. So we have to have a strategy for our life, and we need to have a strategy for America. For instance, you want to turn America around? It's real simple. 1 million startups a year. Boom. Solve everything. Solve every problem we have, because most of our problems are around jobs or the lack thereof. 1 million startups a year. We'll just do it. These are all Gallup numbers, by the way. So what does the census tell us now? 2011, there are more small business deaths than small business births since we've been measuring this in the country. Now, that's like in Oregon, if you have no one's having babies anymore, and the elderly people are, you know, the majority population, your economic growth is going to slow down. Your expenses are going to increase. And GDP is going to grind to a halt because most jobs come from startup shoot-ups, entrepreneurs, small business owners in year 3 through year 7, which tend to be young people with a dream. Now, in this country, most jobs, by the way, come from particularly in a place like the Northwest, you have half of all jobs in America that are 100 employees or less. 70% of all jobs are 500 employees or less. And you think about where we go every week. Think about this. They go to a barbershop or a hair salon. They go to a nail salon. They go to a dentist maybe a couple times a year. They go to their local medical office. They go to the car wash. They go to a restaurant. I mean, all this stuff is sub 25 people as far as employees. But we tell our kids, go to school K through 12, go to college, great, do that, and go work for a big company or government, neither of which are hiring. So we're looking for love in all the wrong places. This is not getting the memo. We're buying into a myth that doesn't exist. And we're ignoring the thing that is right in front of us, that is the gateway to transformational change in our lives. In the book, I gave many examples. One guy, Eric, a mobile notary. That's not a rocket science business.
No, it just goes about making sure that he notarizes signatures, but takes it on the road instead of having an office.
$17,000 a month.
Really? Seriously?
$17,000 of income a month. I almost fell out of my seat when the guy told me this. And I was so cocky and presumptuous when I asked him, oh, you must be a teacher doing this part-time. Ha, 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 ha. You know, thanks for notarizing my stuff. No, I do it full-time. He was very humble. So tell me more. Anyway, I finally got out of him. He was doing almost $20,000 a month. He had 200 subcontractors. He's cutting them checks. It's not a rocket science. The whole cost of the business, a $36 notary stamp.
Wow. that's his entire overhead?
Well, I underwrote his annual cost of his business during our meeting. Well, he's got to pay for gas and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, the point is that we overly complicate success and failure in our lives. And we overly complicate the boogeyman and what's keeping us back. And I think we overly complicate, if not completely mistake, what's going to save us and what's going to transform our lives and make our children's lives at least as prosperous as ours has been. 30 million kids, 4th grade through 12th grade, with a dropout rate today of 30 to 70%. Now, if we don't solve that, we're done. In 10 years, America is a nation that used to lead the free world. But you can completely turn that around. Why? The kids are dropping out for one very simple reason. They don't think education is relevant to their future. It's not rocket science. I mean, we complicate these things. All a school is a business. The customer is a student. The student is rejecting the product. Why? Because they say, what's the point? I don't see it connected to a job or a shot at economic opportunity. Everybody's aspirational. Nobody wants a mortgage. They don't go to bed dreaming about a mortgage. They want to become a homeowner. Nobody dreams about a car loan. They want a cool car. A kid doesn't want to lecture about, you know, grades or vegetables. They want to know, what is this going to get me? And we failed to connect education with aspiration. So the kids are responding by sending us a message. They're dropping out. And they're dropping out mentally in middle school and physically in high school. So we at Operation Hope, we turned that around through something called Hope Business in a Box Academies and have seen a doubling of student engagement in every category because now we've connected education back to aspiration.
We have a lot more to talk about with John Hope Bryant. His latest book is How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. We'll come back and talk more with John and take your phone calls and emails. I see a couple waiting. Back to the Jefferson Exchange with John Hope Bryant and you in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is John Hope Bryant. The name might ring a bell. He is the founder of Operation Hope, which he began in his native Los Angeles after the Rodney King riots in the early 90s. He served alongside three presidents. He walks and works about empowering people in what he calls low-wealth communities. Chooses not to use the term poor because he thinks poverty is about half a state of mind. Join us on the Exchange as we talk about this book, How the Poor Can Save Capitalism, 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Julie in Ashland. Thanks for waiting and welcome to the Exchange with John Hope Bryant.
Hi. Oh, what a beautiful, hopeful message. And I really want to find out more about it. I want to know how to work with somebody so that I cannot give up on myself. Because I have ideas and I'm an elder citizen and I still want to do what I want to do and have wanted to all my life.
So where to go, yeah. I guess, is the question here, right?
Have her call.
Yes.
Please have her sign online to my nonprofit, operationhope.org. We get no fees, let me underscore, no fees for helping people. Thank God we're subsidized by a bunch of companies and foundations and the government who thinks that we're doing landmark work. So it's operationhope.org. All the services are free, and if we're not near you, we can do it virtually. But also, if we get enough calls from an area, we start to think about trying to open offices in those areas. And you know, I love what she said for two reasons. One, we got to stop thinking about poor people as that little black kid over there or that little Hispanic kid or that, you know, unfortunate person. No. You make, and I want your listeners to think about this narrow-minded. You make $100,000 a year. You're lucky to make $100,000 a year. You can be poor. Why? You used to make $150,000 a year, and you lost your job. Now you're making 75 to 100 because it's the only replacement job you could get. You were out of work for 18 months before you got that job. Your role models around you, you know, half of them got unemployed. They made the same amount of money as you did. They're college educated. Your environment is stinky because everybody in your neighborhood, every other house was a foreclosure, and every fifth person was laid off. And your dad lost his home too. And now your environment and your role models are in the tank. As a result of that, your aspirations, your level of hope, has taken a hit, and your opportunity seems capped. That's poverty. And you can be poor at $30,000 a year in income. And you can be poor, certainly, at $15,000. That's probably fiscally poor, or what we call sustainably poor. Can't sustain a life. But you're certainly going to be poor also at $150,000 a year. We're all in this mess together. What she said also that I love is she's the Walmart story. I mean, we say we hate big business. No. Every big business was once a small one. UPS was a guy with $100 and a bicycle. Walmart was a guy named Sam Walton with a pickup truck. You know, is it a perfect company? No, of course it's not. It's a company. So it's not going to be perfect. They're going to make all kind of mistakes. But along the way, they're employing people, raising GDP, driving growth, and we can be part of this great American mosaic where we start a small business, create something that creates jobs and opportunity, and as a result of that, gain some wealth because we're helping society. That's, by the way, good capitalism. Where bad capitalism is this thing where we're treating people like transactions, like they're a means to our end. And it's about money. Bad capitalism is about getting paid. It's about money. That's this disease of the last 20 or 30 years. Whereas good capitalism was 100 years of Henry Ford's and a bunch of other folks who had an idea We're obsessed with the idea and wanted to act on that idea, no different than the passion I hear in this lady's voice. We don't mind a person like that getting wealthy. We would want this lady who just spoke to do very well because she's going to create jobs, create something of value for society. Yes, she'll benefit personally, and other folks will benefit along the way.
You know, I'm struck by essentially two sides of the same coin, and it's about emotion and morality, because you talk about how poverty is about half a state of mind. There are things that people feel about the way they think that the capitalist system has treated them. And then back to the earlier example about you can use a knife to either butter your brother's bread or cut his arm off. So it's just a tool. So capitalism, then, I think we can agree, is essentially amoral, not necessarily immoral. But so when people get into the system, they need to, on one hand, it seems like, remove their emotions about being mistreated by it, but by the same token, try to put some kindness in it toward fellow man.
Absolutely. I mean, and let me tell you what, and I hope people who have rejected everything I've said because they don't like capitalism and they've already decided what the answer is, fine, but listen to this. If you reject this, you are helping bad capitalists. By rejecting capitalism, which is our predominant system in the world, You are not only living a lie because you're living on the back of a capitalist system yourself, and I can, you know, anybody can call in, I can take their life and reverse engineer it and show them how they're living every day, including this phone call that they're paying AT&T or somebody for, through capitalism. It's allowing them to have the life to even argue about or to reject it. It's like somebody said, I don't like God. Okay, well, God loves you whether you love him or not. It's irrelevant. But by rejecting it, you're not helping to make the world better. You're actually helping to make the bad guys more powerful by saying it doesn't exist. It's like saying that, there is no light switch. Okay, there's a light switch whether you acknowledge it or not. So, yes, it is without morality. But we can inject a purpose to it and give it. A corporation is not anything other than what we make it, but no different than our lives are what we make it.
We have a question here from Michael in Mendocino. I'm not quite sure I understand it myself. He wants to know your opinion on Money 1, Money 2, Money 3, and a brief description of the system. I'm not sure if he's talking about the M1 money supply, stuff like that economists talk about.
Yeah, that's far too deep for this for a radio conversation. What I try to do, he's more than welcome to email me directly, and john.bryant@operationhope.org, and I'll respond to him offline. What this book is about, unlike the Piketty book, I love Mr. Piketty, the French economist.
Which Thomas Piketty, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thomas Piketty, The 21st Century Capitalism. And this book, by the way, is right behind it on the bestseller list. That's 700 pages. Nobody's going to read that. People are getting publishing summaries of 700 pages of his book to understand it. Everybody's getting it because they want to seem smart by saying they have it on their shelf. What Barry Kohler, my publisher, did was allow me to write a book that's actually readable and relatable to the average person. There's no big words in here. There's no, money one, money 15, hut, hut, hut. I mean, people don't want to admit also. They don't know what the Wall Street Journal is saying. They don't have a clue what swaps are and bonds and what's the SEC. I mean, they don't have a clue what people are saying. And again, it's a shame thing. And so we need to wrestle this to the ground, pick it up as a strategy, and move on it tomorrow. Wrestle it to the ground. Pick it up as a strategy and move on it tomorrow, because while we're sitting here talking about this, the economy is literally moving underneath us and the world is changing, and everything going on in the world has an economic basis: war, peace, church, radio stations, the automobile was created for the rich but codified by the poor, restaurants created for the rich. But now you find a restaurant and a gas station. Retailers, biggest retailer in the world is not Macy's and Nordstrom's or whatever the favorite station there is in the Northwest. It's four big box retailers, starting with Walmart and then Costco and Target, as they call it, Target, and so on and so forth. It's the poor. Cell phones. Remember the time that we had that Motorola brick on our shoulder?
Yeah, $3,000.
Yeah, 10 pounds. Now China... And China is just booming, but Africa will be the first wireless continent. I mean, they're going to go from right over no phones to cell phones, no landline phones, 800 million cell phones today for almost a billion people. No running water, but they have cell phones. And no one's giving them cell phones. They're buying them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to stop rejecting this system and start making it better and helping to repair it and with it to repair America. To reject the system is to reject this country, basically, because this country is built on a capitalist democracy.
All right, a couple minutes left with John Hope Bryant and a few contacts from listeners. Julie wanted the website again. It's operationhope.org, operationhope.org. Email from Mike in Medford. He says, as an educated individual who comes from a very poor family, I'm connecting with all these stories. Education is by far the key, financial, health, and education in general. The problem is when powerful people make money off the ignorance or minimal education of the lower classes. Programs and research into changing policy becomes much harder when you interfere with profit-making industries, payday loan companies, junk food industries, property management, etc. It's not just a matter of getting educated when that path has built-in obstacles to deter your dream. When capitalism doesn't diversify into small business, but its progression is into monopolistic domination of markets, only when this reaches its finality will the poor be so taken advantage of that they will be compelled to some type of action.
Stop it. Tell a gentleman, I love him. Thanks for writing it. Thanks for having the hoots, but stop it. That's all wrong. Look, if you get educated in financial literacy, the language of money, you'll put check cashers out of business. You just won't give them your business anymore. It's a choice. No one's forcing you to go to a check casher or anybody else. The thing about monopolistic, stop it. I break all this stuff down in the book. There's 307 billion people on the planet. By the way, I'm not angry. I'm just passionate. I love when I can get to the heart of something.
Mm-hmm.
7 billion people on the planet. 300 million people in America. 26 million businesses in this country. How many employ one job or more? 6 million. These are Gallup numbers. Out of 6 million, how many employ over 10,000 people? This is the monopolistic thing that he's talking about. 974. So in L.A., 97% of all businesses employ 100 people or less. Where's this monopolistic? I mean, and all job growth comes from startups, shoot-ups, small businesses, and entrepreneurs, years three through year seven. That's where job growth comes from. And 70% of all employment is 500 employees or less. This is in America, the largest economy on the planet. Small businesses are in charge. Small businesses are driving the economy. They are creating jobs. They don't have the bugle horn that big businesses do. They're not doing commercials every day. But that's not the reality. That's the perception. Big businesses don't employ people. They use efficiencies. People are a mechanism of small businesses. Maybe you bring me on again. I'll even unpack slavery. That wasn't personal. That was business. It was a horrible business. But it was small business owners, plantation owners, using people as machinery with free labor, quote unquote, free labor.
Hmm.
I mean, I can break this thing down in minute detail. And where was it? What was the richest? And this kind of pimped out capitalism will never last, by the way. So this man should have hope. What was the richest state in America in 1830? Mississippi.
Really?
Based on slave labor. What's the poorest state in America today?
Mississippi.
Let's
take another call. Here's Coyote and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Hope Bryant.
Did you say Coyote?
Yes, I did.
Oh, awesome. Hey, excellent, you guys. About capitalism, in my mind, I'm 66 and I've always felt capitalism, laissez-faire capitalism was what was hurting us. And I thought of social capitalism, not socialism, but social or capitalism of the heart or that. And also, I just wanted to mention, I know in the 50s, taxation was higher and it seemed like things were better. And now everybody wants taxation to be lower and things are falling apart. I think in Kansas, their economy is collapsing because they stopped collecting taxes or from businesses.
All right.
So that's what I'm talking about.
All right. Thanks for that, Coyote. Let's get a response from John.
He's right and he's right and he's not right. He's right that things have changed, and he's right that taxation is out of whack. He's also right, but the larger issue is that this is a crisis of virtues and values. And this goes back to what I said, that we've lost our storyline. For 80 years, this country is about the power of an idea. This country is an idea. All a patent is a monetized idea. CNN was Ted Turner with an idea. Steve Jobs was a guy with an idea. Bill Gates was a guy fired from IBM as a consultant who went to his garage and created Microsoft as an idea. These are all ideas that have been monetized into big businesses now that are employing many people and paying taxes and all that kind of stuff, and highly imperfect. I've already said that. But the last 20 years, in the midst of this global economic crisis, it's really been about getting paid. Why you want to be in business? I want to get rich. Why you want to be a professional athlete? I want to get rich. Why you want to be an actor? I want to get rich. Why you want to be a rap star? I want to get rich. Why you want to be a doctor? Because it pays really well. I want to get rich. It's the wrong motivation. No wonder we're all screwed up. When you made the byproduct your product, you're going to hit a wall. So we are resetting right now. This is a 1-in-100-year change in society, in the world. And this is global. This jobs crisis is global. Don't let anybody lie to you and tell you the Islamic extremism or the Arab Spring was about Islamic extremism. That was about a guy named Muhammad in Tunisia who was not allowed to sell fruits and vegetables from his cart and set himself on fire when the police took his cart and said he needed a permit which didn't exist because it was about bribery. He couldn't take care of his family. Financial dignity. So have hope that we can fix this. Know that the roots are right and the solutions are right in front of us. And know that every person who's emailed or called has the power to create systemic change in their society. One person, one block, one school, one small business at a time. This is a new movement.
The book is called How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. The website, OperationHope.org. Our guest, its author, John Hope Bryant. John, thanks so much for joining us in the exchange.
My honor. I hope you invite me back.
All right. Take care.